Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Philadelphia's Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Piazza Premium Automobile Studios.
Powering your drive with 10 brands and 20 locations.
Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's Dom time. Now, Dom Giordano.
All right, Ray Dittinger, Hall of Famer, wrestling aficionado, among other things, and certainly somebody who has seen it all. Where would he place Saquon Barkley at this point in time? It's only a year, not even a full year completed yet, among the all-time greatest Eagles. Definitely top 10.
Looking for an edge, gets it. Saquon Barkley, first down. Touchdown!
Bad call by Tom Brady in front.
Yeah, I'm surprised that didn't really seem to take the heart out of Washington. But when they were reduced to throwing a ball up over the middle on that fake punt, really tough throw, tough catch by the guy. It was like, man, this is going to be very tough. Let's go to Ray Dittinger on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Ray, welcome back.
Hi, Dom. How are you?
Well, very well. I hope you're doing well. So, Ray, yesterday overall, if Jalen Hurts plays like that as armchair quarterback here myself, I think the Eagles win the Super Bowl. You know, all other things being relatively equal, that's the secret sauce. Yesterday, I didn't see the final percentage. It didn't matter. He was accurate, relatively decisive. You have that. You're not going to beat them.
I think you're probably right about that. He was 20 for 28 with four throwaways, actually. I mean,
right.
Four balls where
yep.
He was rushed and just deliberately threw it out of bounds. So he was on point. He threw for 246 yards, threw for one touchdown, ran for three, and really looked good. I mean, for all the talk last week about the knee injury and how, you know, is he going to have to wear a brace and is he going to be able to move and how limited is he going to be, he didn't look very limited yesterday. And obviously with 2 weeks now to rest up and prepare for the Super Bowl, I mean, he should be absolutely fine there. And, yeah, I mean, he's it's hard. You're not going to win the Super Bowl if your quarterback doesn't play. You know, I mean, it's if your quarterback goes there and doesn't play well, your chances are you're not going to win. You need that. But what you saw yesterday is what really does win in the long haul, which is, you know, contributions from everybody. And you got that yesterday. And I think that's what, when Nick Sirianni was talking to the media after the game, I mean, that's what he kept coming back to, was the idea of what a team victory this was, that everybody contributed. The offense was really good. The offensive line was really good. Hurts was excellent. The receivers came up with some big catches. Goddard came up with some big catches and runs. And, of course, Saquon Barkley, you know. And then your defense came up with the four takeaways. And you got some big plays from your special teams. I mean, so everybody, you know, everybody in that room contributed to that game yesterday. And, you know, Washington, if you look at the final score, it looks like it was easy. You know, people look
right.
at that score and
right.
say, geez, oh, man, they killed them. That was actually a very tough game. I mean, Washington's a good team. They certainly demonstrated that a week ago when they blew out Detroit. And, you know, and they fought the Eagles hard. hard for three quarters, but then finally in the fourth quarter, a couple of those turnovers just put them out of the game, and the Eagles in the fourth quarter owned it. But I mean, it was an impressive performance against a really good young team.
Without a doubt. Now, I used to be the biggest Brady fan. I guess I am, but come on. Nick Foles is my guy. When you won't shake his hand, Ray, I got to admit deep down, maybe I'm not fair, but I think Mahomes is getting pretty close to being as good as Brady, if not better. And the difference is this. His running ability in key spots is the ultimate weapon. It just sets him apart than the limitations that Brady had.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, a quarterback like that, with that kind of mobility, he's a backbreaker for defense. He really is. I mean, you know, the defense, and this is something Vic Fangio's, you know, going to have to wrestle with now for the next 2 weeks, is as a defensive coordinator, you can call exactly the right defense. You can have your guys in exactly the right position. You can have all of your coverage responsibilities, everybody playing exactly what they're supposed to play. And that guy can look and then get out of the pocket and turn what should be a negative play into a first down for him. You know, and if he does that three times in a game, those are backbreakers. You know, if he has three of those plays on a third down where he turns a situation where, okay, they're not going to make it, they're going to have to give you the ball back, all of a sudden he takes out of the pocket and maybe gets 8 yards on a third and six. If he does that like three times in a game, that's just a very hard thing for a defense to overcome. And, you know, we're seeing with the NFL now, and I've watched enough of it that I can, you know, I mean, I see it now and I just kind of accept it as fact. It's getting very hard. It's getting very hard to win in the NFL if you don't have a quarterback who can move. I mean, that's just it. I mean, you know, the days of the Peyton Mannings and the Johnny Unitases and the Roman Gabriels that won all the games from the pocket, it's really hard for those guys now because those other guys, all these guys that can move, all these guys that can run, and you look at all the guys that are playing now. I mean, Lamar Jacksons and Josh Allens and Mahomes and Hurts and all of these quarterbacks that were winning and taking teams into the postseason, you know, they've all got that mobility. They've all got that ability to, as they say, extend a play and turn nothing into something. It's very hard. It's very hard for a quarterback today to win if he doesn't have that other weapon.
So what do we look forward in the Super Bowl? Who is it that has had success, or what type of mentality? In other words, Ray, I think the Eagles have gotten one of the all-time great defensive coordinators, but I don't think he matches up against Mahomes, at least what he usually does. He's bend but don't break. You can't do that against Mahomes.
Well, you pick your spots is what you have to do. I mean, that's the people that have had success against Mahomes, and not that many people have, but those that have, what they do is they just keep him off balance. You just keep giving him different looks. Make him guess. I mean, he's, you know, he can make mistakes. I mean, but it's not easy to fool him. But you have to do that. If you just come at him with one defensive system, if you just come at him with one coverage that your guys are, we're going to play this coverage, we're going to give you this look, we're going to blitz off of this look. If you just make it easy for him, then you have no chance. What you have to do is you have to bring a lot of stuff and then present it in ways that you make him stop and think. Now, he can still, he is still so good in terms of both being able to find a receiver, deliver the ball on time, or just tuck the ball away and run for a first down, that he can still run out of trouble. But you have to make him confused at times. It's hard to confuse him, but that's the thing you have to do. You have to be able to throw just enough stuff at him in ways that he doesn't expect and knock him a little bit off balance. Once he has figured out exactly what you want to do, once he's actually, okay, I see it. He's on the sidelines looking at that little tablet and he sees the defense, and once he sees what you're doing, if that's all you got, then you got no chance. So you're gonna have to find some ways to throw some things at him that are a little bit of a surprise and get him unexpected and maybe force him into a mistake or two. And Fangio is very good at that. Fangio is, you know, he's been doing this so long. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's dealt with quarterbacks going, you know, all the way back. I mean, he's been doing this since the mid-80s. So he's dealt with he's dealt with all kinds of quarterbacks, great ones and all the way down to the not so great ones. But and he's very good at that kind of mental game that he plays against quarterbacks. And he fully recognizes this kid's a real challenge. But you know, Vic Fangio's won a few of those battles, and you know, now he's got one more.
All right. Now, the Eagles are playing against 12 men, though. You were already hearing it on WIP. I don't know if you're on this morning or not, Ray, but last night it started. They're biased. They did get a lot of calls this year that went their way in close moments. They had a number of close games. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? Is there any sense that the refs not blatantly favor anything, but, you know, in gray areas, they're looking toward the Chiefs?
They do, sure. I mean, that's not sour grapes. I mean, that's mm-hmm. truth. I mean, if you're watching the games, you see it. But it's not. It didn't begin with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it's yes, we saw it with Peyton Manning. You know, we saw right. it with Brady. You know, I mean, those guys. I mean, there were times that I saw roughing the passer called on Peyton Manning when somebody just brushed his literally brushed his helmet and got and you got a 15-yard penalty. Same thing with Brady. Meanwhile, you get, you know, guys like Brett Favre. I mean, they were letting him get killed week after week. I mean, he never seemed to get the calls, but so other guys do. And I think that Mahomes is that guy now. You know, I mean, he's accomplished so much, and everybody knows what he is, and he's, you know, he's the number one quarterback in the game right now. So he's going to get the benefit of those calls. And it's not that the league is trying to set it up that he's going to win, and not that he even needs the help, but that's just the way it goes. I mean, it's sort of like, I know, Dom, you're a big basketball guy, and I mean, we all saw it with Michael Jordan. You know, I mean, Michael Jordan got every call,
right?
And he was a great player, and he earned that respect, and he probably didn't need as much help as he got from the guys in the striped shirts, but he got it because he was Michael Jordan. And Patrick Mahomes is the NFL's equivalent.
Yeah, without a doubt. But and you know what? The Bills lost their cool a little bit when they tackled Mahomes. I thought it was fine at the end zone line. And then Kelce comes in, gets in there, and then the other guy comes in and butts Kelce, who flops, falls down like he's in basketball. And the refs right away go with a 15-yard penalty. I wouldn't have called that.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have either. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in the Eagles-Washington game, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of after-the-whistle pushing and shoving and, you know, guys taking swings at each other. And that. I mean, those were two really chippy games, but you understand it. I mean, you get this late in the season, you understand the stakes. You're going to see some of that. But I'll tell you, one of the things that the Eagles have to be aware of, and I hope – you know, I hope they talk about it in-house between now and New Orleans, is Jalen Carter. I mean, Jalen Carter is a terrific young player. I mean, right now, he's one of the three best, and I'm being conservative when I say that, one of the three best defensive linemen in football right now. I mean, he's that good on only his second year. But he's got a reputation now for playing outside the rules some. You know, and I mean, you saw it yesterday when he belted that Washington guy in the head and knocked him down after the play. That's the kind of stuff that the officials know about that, and they talk about that, and they look for it. You know, and if you become a little bit of a marked man somewhere in a Super Bowl in a big situation, you know, he could do a similar kind of thing and get a flag that could really hurt you. I mean, if he would do something like that, let's say on a third and nine play. When Mahomes throws an incompletion, and you should be getting off the field as a defense, but he takes a punch at somebody after the whistle, and if somebody's looking at him, and they're going to be looking at him, and they throw a flag, and you get a fresh and Patrick, you're giving Patrick Mahomes a fresh set of downs. Something like that could cost you a game. So, look, Carter's really good, and I don't want to take his edge away because I think he's a guy that has to play it rough and tough, and he should. But he's going to have to play really smart because he's now got officials looking for him.
Exactly.
And one of those kinds of plays in the wrong spot could cost you a game. I mean, you saw it the last time the Eagles played the Chiefs in a Super Bowl. It was a holding. It was a guy grabbing a jersey in the end zone that helped contribute to them losing that game. And sometimes an official can make a call, even in the biggest game, that can cost you the game. And it did. It happened the last time the Eagles were there playing the same team, and you don't want to let that happen again.
Right. Who do you favor with in the end, though? You know, the most spread I see out there, they favor the Chiefs. I don't see it that way. The Eagles' defense is so much better than they were before. Kelce's gone downhill a little bit. On the Eagles side, they didn't have anything like Barkley the last time. It's not so much whether he runs, you know, for 200 yards. It's a fear of God that you always got to be looking at him. I think they ought to be favored.
Well, you're going to, they're going to go with the two-time champs. I mean, they're just going to. I mean, they've earned that respect, and they're trying to accomplish something that no team in the modern era of pro football has accomplished, which is win it three in a row. I mean, that's an amazing feat. So I expected them to be favored. The fact that the Eagles are within a point and a half of them now, I think is. I was a little surprised. I thought it was going to be a little bit more. I thought it was going to be closer to three.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's see if how much it moves between now and next Sunday. Let's see if it nudges up a half a point or down a half a point. But I think that, to me, I look at these two teams and I think they're very even. I think they're very, very even. I mean, the Eagles are—they're really good. I mean, top to bottom on their roster, I think they have a better team than the Chiefs. I really do.
Yeah.
And I think they have that much talent on this team. And I think the fact that they were in this game a couple years ago, they understand what Super Bowl week mm-hmm. is like. They understand the craziness that goes on there with all the interviews and all the hoopla that surrounds you for a whole week. I think the first time you go there and you have to play in that game, it can really take you. It can really take your mind out of it. And the fact that they were in it just a couple years ago, most of these guys, I think will really help them going back this time. And you're right about it. I mean, they certainly didn't have a weapon anything like Saquon Barkley 2 years ago.
Where do you place him?
He's a game changer.
It's only 1 year, and I know, but you've seen him play with the Giants. You know what he did there. Is he among the top 10 Eagles ever?
It's hard to say after just 1 year. It really is. I mean, I've done enough writing about Eagles history, you know, that I have an appreciation for Steve Van Buren. Now, there isn't anybody around that remembers Steve Van Buren. I mean, he played in the 40s. But he led the league in rushing four times,
yeah.
You know, and led them to back-to-back world championships. You know, and he had statistics that in a 12-game season were just jaw-dropping. I mean, he was getting 1,000 yards in a 12-game season. You know, I think Van Buren was a special player. That's why he's the first Eagle in the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, for what this guy has done this year, it might be if he actually wins the Super Bowl, if he actually takes this team to the Super Bowl and they win the Super Bowl, I think you could safely say that this is the greatest season by any Eagles running back ever. Now,
wow.
If you ask me who's the best Eagles player of all time, I would probably still tell you Bednarik.
Yeah, I knew you would. You shocked me for a moment. You hesitated there. I thought you were going to say something else, and I was going to say, that's it, Ray.
No.
You know why?
No,
it's not just talent. It's the legendary type of stuff that you associated with him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
Dumb. I mean, the guy played 60 minutes a game when he was 35 years old.
I'm thinking of drinking
a world championship.
Drinking a beer with a cigarette and cigar in his mouth at the same time. Now, that's
exactly right.
Legendary.
Yeah, they don't make them like that anymore.
No, Ray, thank you. Hey, Ray, today's side question in honor of this great win, our side question is all-time best or worst Philly sports moment. You're the dean of all this stuff. What's yours?
Oh, as of now, it's still got to be Super Bowl 52.
Okay.
As of now, it's still got to be Super Bowl 52. I mean, that was the moment until 2 weeks from now, and maybe we're going to see a better one. But as of right now, I'll still go with Nick Foles in Super Bowl 52.
Good choice, Ray. Thank you, Ray. Thanks for coming on today.
Always a pleasure, Dom. Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much, Henry or Dan. Anything to add to that? I'm in sync with Ray. I think he thinks the Eagles are.
What can you
parody.
Add to such a legend?
Yes,
as Ray
yes, exactly. Yeah,
he's covered all the gamut. Yeah,
yeah.
I was surprised that he said the point spread might be bigger, like 2-3.5 points. I think 1.5 is right where it should be.
I got a sense he thinks it's going to go down in the Eagles' favor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I think so. 855-839-1210. You get on board. You can jump in. Hit us with that. Coming up, J.D. Vance goes on first big interview yesterday, Face the Nation, and he's asked about Catholics, and he's a converted Catholic, and illegal immigration. And what he says about the bishops, I wish I had been there to shake his hand. Exactly right of what's going on here. And I wonder how Catholics are going to react to this. I don't think they're going to favor what the bishops are saying versus what Trump and the country is saying. And then Sean Parnell will join us, big friend of Pete Hegseth, We'll ask him about what's the to-do list. What does Pete Hegseth have to do? Phone lines, 855-839-1210. All right, Dom time. So J.D. Vance gave the first sit-down interview, they call it, yesterday to Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation. And they really got into it on immigration and then the Brennan ploy of when are you going to bring down the cost of bacon. This is cut 12, though. And they're going back and forth. And particularly, she knows that Vance is a converted Catholic. The bishops come up and the bishops at the border and all these non-legit nonprofit groups are doing, shuttling illegal immigrants around the country. Here's how it sounded.
I don't agree that all these immigrants or all these refugees have been properly vetted. In fact, we know that there are cases of people who allegedly were properly vetted and then were literally planning terrorist attacks on our country. That happened during the campaign, if you may remember. So clearly not all of these foreign nationals have been properly vetted.
No, but there are 30,000 people in the pipeline. Afghan refugees.
But my primary concern as the vice president, Margaret, is to look after the American people. And now that we know that we have vetting problems with a lot of these refugee programs, we absolutely cannot unleash thousands of unvetted people into our country.
These people
it's
are
not
vetted.
Good.
These people are vetted.
Just like the guy who planned a terrorist attack in Oklahoma a few months ago, he was allegedly properly vetted. And many people in the media and the Democratic Party said that he was properly vetted. Clearly he wasn't. I don't want my children to share a neighborhood with people who are not properly vetted. And because I don't want it for my kids, I'm not going to force any other American citizens' kids to do that either.
No, and that was a very particular case. It wasn't clear if he was radicalized when he got here or while he was living here.
I don't really care, Margaret. I don't want that person in my country, and I think most Americans agree with me.
Okay. Now, Vance also went after Catholic bishops who criticized the ICE raids. Particularly, they got into talking about, are you going to come into churches, et cetera. And he actually said they're worried about their bottom line. And I think the figure of $100 million was thrown around here. Sadly, Catholic Charities then today or over the weekend, they put up this on Twitter for people here illegally what their rights were with ICE. They didn't say to do anything illegal, but it's trending on Twitter because people have had it here. In other words, Vance made this point too, and I'll make it again and again. The bishops are compromised here. It's $100 million guesstimate the Catholic Charities, churches, et cetera, are getting. To shuffle people around that Americans don't want this. And then people like Dolan, this bishop sits last week, who apparently is their leader on this, they lecture the rest of us on it. This is inhumane, immoral, everything else. We've been down this road before. So Catholics are going to be in the front line on this, particularly Vance. I think he handled it beautifully. He called them out. I haven't seen the response today. What are they going to say? No, we're not making a lot of money out of this. No, we're not giving advice to illegal immigrants. Why are you giving them advice about their so-called rights in this? Is that your role? Why? What is it you're trying to do with this? And stop the lecturing. Stop telling us, playing this game, making money over here, and on the other side, telling us, well, it's sinful. What's going on here? 855-839-1210. In your church, what's the stance on all this? What's being said about it? We haven't seen it in Philadelphia yet. They're working their way here because Chicago, of course, is the big epicenter of this. That's where the action has been. That's where it seems to be the capital of it. And some of the most egregious cases. All right, 855-839-1210. And again, Vance making the point as both vice president and as a Catholic, no, we're not going to listen to this. The country's voted on this. Nothing's being done that's inhumane. So on the one hand, the media is saying, why have you not removed more? On the other hand, they're saying it costs too much to remove people. 855-839-1210. I'm watching this today, too. It's pretty wild what's going on right now with the NASDAQ, the tech stocks, that the Chinese may have some kind of app, AI app, that is cheaper or going to be more effective than what the American tech stocks have. And it's causing just incredible meltdown at this point. This AI stuff is very problematic, several levels, and it's causing, again, this sense, oh my God, what are they going to do with it? And what is going to be the impact on these American companies if they can't keep up? All right, let's go to Robert in Ben Salem. Robert, you're on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Robert, afternoon.
Hey, Dom, Dan, it's good to talk to you guys today.
Same here.
I hope you guys had a good weekend, and I want to congratulate y'all on your team just kicking butt, and I hope that they kill the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Who's your team, Robert? Yeah, I heard that there.
I'm a lifelong Raiders fan, unfortunately, that won't change, but
okay.
I just keep my – but most of my kids and some friends and relatives are all Eagles fans, so when they play, I root for the Eagles as long as they're not playing the Raiders.
Okay, gotcha.
Eagles!
She's working on that. She has 2 weeks to spell it correctly. Yes,
no,
working.
Spell it wrong. Keep going.
Yeah.
Even when Sherelle gets it wrong, okay. But I'm going to just go right to the side answer, or side question, rather. 1985, Villanova defeats the juggernaut known as Georgetown. I watched the game. I love rooting for underdogs, so that was right up my alley. And it just seemed like Villanova couldn't miss. Every time they put a shot up, it went down. And I'm just getting more and more excited. Raleigh Massimino's getting crazy. That was a really fun time, Don. I really enjoyed
it
that
It was
game.
A fun game. I mean, they maximize, you know, I don't know what they shot from. I don't know if it was three then or not. But from the outside, it was incredible. And they had Ewing. They froze the ball most of the game. It was beautifully played. Yeah.
63% shooting, I think, Dom.
Yeah,
that was great. So that's my answer, and I'm going to enjoy the rest of the show, and you guys have a great day, okay?
That's a good one. That was a big moment, and over at Villanova, they went kind of nuts in the streets, so to speak, after that. All right, 855-839-1210. Captain Sean Parnell is next, friend of Pete Hegseth. What's the to-do list? By the way, thanks to, I think it was Mark out there who sent this to Greg. Yeah, I said passive-aggressive. There's a military term for what the Air Force did as far as knocking off the inspirational video of the Tuskegee Airmen just to get even with the Trump administration, malicious compliance. In other words, we're complying with the order, but we're going to take it to the extreme because we don't like it. We're going to do malicious compliance. With people like that, there's got to be a repercussion. All right, Sean Parnell's next on Talk Radio 1210. All right, Dom Giordano's show. Of course, one of our favorites, Captain Sean Parnell, ran the mail-in campaign here very effectively in Pennsylvania, hard to do, and also deep ties with various veterans groups and working with Pete Hegseth. And I just told you a moment ago, this Air Force thing, the military term apparently is malicious compliance, passive-aggressive. Hey, DEI, you don't want us to do that? All right, we're not going to show the film of the Tuskegee Airmen or these women pilots. I know Pete Hegseth's got a lot on his mind there, Defense Department. I think send somebody there, root out the people that did this, every one of them, get them out of there. Let's go to Captain Sean Parnell on Talk Radio 1210. Sean, welcome back to Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Dom, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, that military term, I saw it this morning. I just called it passive aggressive. But have you ever experienced that where they say, oh, yeah, you want me to follow this? Well, I absolutely will. I'll get rid of apparently every successful African-American and like the Tuskegee Airmen. Who does that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, this sadly doesn't surprise me because this is the type of stuff that happened a lot during President Trump's first administration, his first 4 years. And so this Dom, this is a perfect example of what I like to, when I refer to the deep state or bloated bureaucracy or the blob or call it whatever you want, this is what I mean. And they will, through either malicious compliance or outright subversion, do everything that they can to stall or thwart you know, President Trump's agenda. And sometimes, you know, that's as simple as, you know, an executive order is issued, and at some level of the bureaucratic process, some unelected bureaucrat leaves it in the inbox and doesn't put it in the outbox, and it doesn't get disseminated. Or in the case of something like this, hey, look, there's not going to be any diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in the United States military, because ultimately it's a distraction from the military. So what some of these deep staters do is they say, well, fine, you don't want DEI. We're just not going to teach about the historic Tuskegee Airmen. And the reason it's ridiculous, right? And the reason why they do it is for one reason and one reason only. That's to embarrass
yes.
Secretary Hegseth and Trump. That's it.
Well, I think it's worth it to get to the bottom. Again, these are military people, probably, maybe a civilian or two, who knows, to get to that, to root them out, make an example of them. I think this is a good one, as tiring as it is. And Sean, you're inside this a little bit more with some people there, but my sense from the people we talk with, Trump, and what I see, they are drilling down. They put the deputy people in place already in all these cabinet offices. They realize how much they can slow stuff up. This is somebody that you can make an example of. The average American knows about Tuskegee Airmen. This is just asking to be made an example of.
And you have to do it, Dom. Otherwise, like you have to find egregious offenders of violations of orders given by the commander in chief, and you have to make examples of it. Because if you don't, it's going to get worse, and these people will get more bold over the next 4 years. And look, I don't care. Democrats out there who are listening, this pertains to you too. Like, when there's a Democrat president in office, you're not going to want some Republican staffer who's resisting a duly elected commander-in-chief's agenda. The commander-in-chief is our voice. You know, we sent him to Washington on a mandate to enact an agenda on behalf of the American people. I did not vote for these unelected bureaucrats who are going to resist President Trump's agenda. It's completely unacceptable. So it's the right thing to do to make an example of some of these people and fire them. And by the way, it's even more important in the Department of Defense, where following orders can be the difference between life and death. I mean, think about this, Dom. I mean, sometimes this gets lost in the sauce a little bit in the politics of what we're discussing. But an overt focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion does not make our military more lethal. It doesn't make us a more effective force. It doesn't increase our readiness. And any singular minute that our servicemen and women spend studying diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is divisive crap, it makes them less lethal on the battlefield and makes it less likely for America's right. sons and daughters to come home from those wars should we have to fight them. It's unacceptable.
And Sean, organically, that's what the military has always been about anyhow. Organically, there's diversity, at least when you look back.
Yes.
Every World War II film or even Vietnam film or whatever, you saw that kind of, Saving Private Ryan. The one guy's from the Bronx. There's a guy from Texas they always put in there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, I had probably one of the most diverse infantry platoons that you could possibly imagine, Dom. Black next to white, Christians next to atheists, next to Jews, rich next to poor, Northerners, Southerners, Democrats, Republicans. But what made my unit, my platoon, but the military in general at large, the most lethal fighting force in the face of the planet, is that we put aside our differences. We unite under the common banner of being Americans. And with that comes, you know, an amazing and an extraordinary legacy that every single person who wears a flag on their shoulder, and again, it doesn't matter where you come from, what God you worship, or what color your skin is, like, you got that flag on your shoulder, you stand for something greater than yourself. You're part of something greater than yourself. And like DEI and all this insane leftist political social experiment crap in our military distracts from all of that. And, you know, yeah, the examples need to be made for sure.
What else should Hegseth is the major focus now, in addition to what you and I just talked about, the recruiting piece of this, of why they're having such trouble. And it seems to me he is such a different disruptor. the TV presence, his military service, that ought to help the push toward recruiting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that we are in a very, very serious recruiting crisis, the likes of which we have not seen in this country since shortly after the Vietnam War. And so in order to turn that ship around, it's going to require bold action and purging diversity, equity, inclusion, and all that insane stuff from the military is obviously an important part of that. But it's also having leaders that get out there and inspire confidence in the next generation of American warfighters that, hey, we want the best and the brightest, the biggest, the fastest, the strongest, the most proficient. Again, it doesn't matter where you come from or how much money you make. You have an opportunity to be the best as part of the U.S. military, and we want that. And so having somebody at the helm of the organization that talks about the Army values, that talks about the warrior ethos and why our military is special, and the fact that, you know, when you come into this, you're standing on the shoulders of giants, just like that kid from World War II from the Bronx who fought on D-Day or jumped into Normandy and fought to Hitler's Eagle's Nest. Like, we inherited an extraordinary legacy from those men and women who fought back then. And they get to be a part of that now. And having somebody at the helm who expresses those values and talks about those values in and of itself will help with recruiting for sure.
Sean, it looks like the president, at least from what we hear, I haven't seen it yet, is going to issue an executive order around people that are trans, identify as that, in the military. And again, anybody that wants to sign up and serve the country, that's great. But the argument has always been, and you've had actual command experience around this, of trans people in the military, that this is not the place, particularly active duty, combat type of situation. What are some of the difficulties with it?
Well, they're unfit to serve. And it's not, and I'm not insulting them. In America, you live your life the way that you want. But the idea that our military is somehow exclusive is laughable because by definition, we are an exclusive organization. If you have flat feet, you can't serve. If you have asthma, you can't serve. If you're overweight, you can't serve. There's a litany of different reasons why you cannot serve or you don't meet the qualifications to serve. And a lot of times people, like trans people, will join the military, get a taxpayer-funded surgery, and then they got to go on 12 months of narcotics and hormones. During that time, they're non-deployable. And even after that, they're non-deployable because you can't go to an outward base in Afghanistan and be on hormone therapy to keep you the gender that you believe that you are, especially when the helicopter stops showing up with those hormones. It you put everyone around you at risk. So this isn't an attack on trans people. It's not an attack on the lifestyle that they choose to live, but that lifestyle is not consonant with life in the American military. And again, President Trump is right on the money. It's all about readiness and lethality. And this doesn't make us a more ready, lethal force. It just doesn't.
Sean, what's up with you now? We know last time we spoke, and still in the mix here, the mail-in balloting went spectacularly well and continues. What are you up to?
Well, we're just continuing to build that organization. I mean, look, did you see the registration gains that we made in Pennsylvania over the last couple of weeks?
Absolutely.
Like, in a couple of years, I'm convinced that there are going to be more registered Republicans in this state than Democrats.
By the midterms, we're going to hold you to that. Boy, that's you and Scott Presler's coming up. That's a lethal team. But boy, if we're close, we know what to say. You know, because some of these people are in Democrats in name only. They grew up that way and all, but they're voting. Yeah, they're right. Voting the other way now. We know that.
Yeah, and we have to look at the left, the radical left, they don't take time off. And one thing that I can tell you for certain is that nationally, but certainly here in Pennsylvania as well, the Democrat Party is in disarray right now. Like, there was a poll on CNN asking who Democrats thought the leader of their party was. Is it Kamala Harris? No. Is it Joe Biden? No. Is it Barack Obama? No. The leading percent getter was, I don't know. So we have to take advantage of that, Dom. We
exactly.
can't rest on our laurels. While they're in disarray, we've got to capitalize.
Absolutely. Sean, thank you so much. Thanks for your service, as always, and your great insight today. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Take care, Dom.
Captain Sean Parnell here on Malicious Compliance, 855-839-1210. Coming up, We have a couple of other things that have just happened. You heard what he said about the president's order on people that are trans in the military. Got a little bit more on that. A couple of other things, too, before we get to Scott Presler on Talk Radio 1210. All right, Dom Giordano's show in the next hour. Scott Presler, also several people I really respect, pointing out Big Pharma coming after RFK Jr. or more big agriculture. A lot of these Republicans don't like it, what he's talking about, where he's going, and yet he's the breakout guy with suburban moms who might lean one way or the other. RFK Jr., what's in the food, kids. But John Fetterman was on The View today. He was Sonny Hostin, you know, you're not what you pretend to be. We thought you were left wing and all that. But there's more of Fetterman trying to explain how he's reacting to Trump, et cetera. Here's how it sounded on The View.
Is it anything you've been seeing or do you anticipate that there's going to be changes that we should be prepped for that we're not thinking about?
Honestly, I haven't been surprised by anything now. I mean, he's been doing essentially what he actually campaigned on, that. Mm-hmm. He announced he is going to pardon the J6 individuals. He is going to absolutely go after the border. So there's a lot of things that he's already ran on. I mean, criticize a lot of it, mm-hmm. and I don't agree with everything either, but it's undeniable he actually ran on that and been really upfront. He's like, I am your reputation, and he's, you know, kind of making those moves. So that's kind of where we're at early on. Immediately after the election, I was like, hey, you know, we have a choice. You know, we can freak out and follow every other thing around, mm-hmm. you know, like a cat, you know, with a laser, right? You know, after everyone. But I'm not that guy. I'm not going to be that Democrat. You know, for me, there's things I'm going to agree with. Mm-hmm. I'm going to disagree with. But I'm in the business of finding wins for Pennsylvania and for the nation and engaging the president. I think I see that as doing my job. Mm.
All right. So, you know, again, I talk to some people and they say, why would you even talk to Fetterman's the one compromising here. I just don't get this. It's not embracing him or anything else. Where you can with him, he's moving towards you, like on the Lake and Riley bill. That's the part you embrace. You challenge him. He's doing the same thing on his side. He's realizing you can't push back on everything that Trump, from his perspective. He ran on this. He's checking the box. He's telling people, I'm doing what I told you would do, even more. He's accomplishing on that. I mean, the Democrats' play is going to come down to this. After 6 months, a year, you pick a figure. How's it looking in the grocery store? Are these changes starting to whittle away at this mountain that Biden put in the way of the middle class as far as jacking up prices? If we're seeing progress on that, in addition to all the other stuff he's doing, which is popular, then they're not going to have any narrative at all. Doesn't mean they still won't have to say stuff. We know that. Every party does. So their hope is they can hammer that and say, you're not really bringing down inflation that much, because it's so difficult to do this in a relatively short period of time. It's so baked in what Biden has done. I agree. The energy piece, the regulations, all that money invested in America, you got to think that's going to have a chip away effect. All right. Sean Parnell just referenced Scott Presler and I referenced him, the registration, how well that's going in Pennsylvania, what's happening in New Jersey, and the Amish. National news, at least I saw it on Presler's Twitter and trending, because they've offered to join with Trump to rebuild America, the fires and everything else, the hurricanes. That's where they want to be involved. And that was a really smart tour that he did, going to North Carolina first, going to California, coming back through Nevada, the no tax on tips, and then Vance today in Virginia with more hurricane victims. It's a different vibe than the first time around. It's much more organized. Much more flooding the zone with stuff that's actual policy that Democrats can't counter. All right, phone lines, hit us with that all-time sports moment. Here's your chance to get in with that. 855-839-1210.
Dom Giordano, weekdays. weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.